Hello and welcome to Epochs. I am here with History Bro, who of course is always here on Epochs. And I'm very excited to be talking about the Waco siege because I've seen bits and pieces about it. I've seen sort of libertarian types claiming it's some sort of government overreach, but there's a bit more nuance to it than that from what you've told me. I don't really know too much about it other than, you know, where it happened, Waco, Texas, and roughly who was involved, but I don't know any of the details whatsoever. So I'm interested to find out the actual truth of the situation.
Well, that might be difficult to get to because it's okay. One of those things where both sides make counterclaims, and I'm going to try and be as fair as I possibly can on this, because both sides seem to be at fault. Both sides seem to be lying at various points, and different people, depending on your sort of political persuasion, have got a different view on it. So I'm going to try as best possible to get to the truth. Having said that, that's not going to be possible. I do have my own views, you know.
Of course.
But I'm going to try to be as fair-minded as I can on it. So it's one of the epochs. I think it's one of the most up-to-date ones. It's 1993 this happened in, February and March 1993. It's a siege that lasted for 51 days, the longest siege in modern American history. Now, I love a siege. As a history nerd, love a good siege, me. Because they're nearly always extreme, a siege. You nearly always get to sort of to the bottom of sort of the most extreme depths that humans go to at sieges. So from like the Siege of Lachish I did with Carl not too long ago in the ancient Assyrian world, one of the first recorded sieges, the Siege of Masada. Well, there's just endless sieges throughout history. You know, the Siege of Stalingrad and Leningrad in World War II, sort of endlessly fascinated by those, I am. The Sydney Street Siege, the Iranian Embassy Siege, you know that one, where the SAS blew up that balcony. And
I mean, anyway, I know lots of sieges, but you really are reeling them off there.
Yeah, there's loads of sieges. So anyway, the Waco Siege is particularly interesting to me, because like I said, just to reiterate, I don't have a dog in this fight. You know, I'm not a Christian, certainly not a Seventh-day Adventist, Branch Davidian Christian, and I don't particularly care for, or I'm not a partisan for the ATF or the FBI or Janet Reno, the Attorney General at the time. So, you know, I've got nothing to win or lose. I'm just really interested. There's a few things in history that I'm sort of weirdly fascinated by. The Chernobyl incident, for example. Anything about it, any documentary, I will have watched. Well, anyway, Waco is one of those ones. Because I remember it as a kid. I was like, what, 11 or 12 years old? And I definitely remember fairly clearly it being on TV. Because the whole world watched this play out. The whole world.
I don't think it happened before I was born, I think.
It's 1993. When are you born?
95.
Right, there you go.
There we go. Just outed myself as a youngster.
And there was a full sort of congressional level or state level, Senate level investigation later in 1995. In fact, Chuck Schumer, a much younger Chuck Schumer, was chair of that, I believe. He was certainly involved in it. And Joe Biden as well. Again, a much, much younger Joe Biden.
They've been around for a long time, haven't they?
Now. Yeah, 30 years ago. Anyway, it's a fascinating story, I think, because it touches on loads of different things. Or just to give people an overview, you might not have ever have heard of it. There's a Christian compound, and the authorities, there's a massive shootout there, and then a siege, a standoff, 51 days, and then in the end, the authorities, the FBI, it was a bloody massacre at the end, like a horrific ending to it. I won't spoil it entirely. We'll get to it when we get to it. But that's what it was. And so from one side of the argument, it's like just the authorities, the police, the government, the FBI, are just, they're killers, murderers. It was all their fault, really. All the bloodshed was all their fault.
I think people who have that perspective, they're looking at it from the point of view of it was the ATF that originally wanted to search the property because they had reports that there were unlicensed firearms. And so I think lots of those anti-governmental people are people who would be like, yeah, the Second Amendment means I don't need government approval to have a gun because you know the whole point of the Second Amendment is that you're meant to use them against the government if they're acting tyrannical.
Right.
So there's, I mean, that strain of argument has sense, but it wouldn't probably be the case I would use to.
Well, we'll get to that when we come to the actual shootout. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one side of the argument says that is the Branch Davidians, the Christians up there at Mount Carmel, just outside Waco, Texas, which is about halfway between Austin and Houston. They didn't do nothing wrong. And the authorities basically killed them, including loads of kids. Loads of kids die in this. And the other side say, no, they showed incredible restraint. And all the aggression came from the Branch Davidians. And they basically got themselves killed. And at the very end, they set themselves alight. And the authorities within more or less didn't do anything wrong. So they're the two extremes you could take on this. Just to say my opinion, because I obviously do have an opinion. I think both sides made terrible, terrible mistakes. There's one quote from the later investigation, one of the people sitting on the board. He said, "Everybody who touched the ball at Waco fumbled it." I think that's quite a good quote. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's true.
I mean, even from my limited knowledge, I think, yeah, everyone who went into that situation, I don't think a massacre was necessarily what they wanted. Well, I mean, I can't necessarily speak for the ATF.
Right.
But I would imagine, just as a best guess, that they would have probably preferred a cleaner resolution than that.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly the kids from the Branch Davidian side, their children were their sort of most precious thing. And from the FBI side, yeah, I totally believe they genuinely, because it's what they were just constantly saying the whole time and after, were trying to resolve it without the kids being killed, even at the very end, and I'll get to details at the end. They just expected the people just to come out. They didn't expect them to martyr themselves or allow their children to be burnt to death. So we'll get into how it all happened. So first of all, just want to talk about the Branch Davidians a little bit, give a bit of a background to them. So they're a Christian sect. And so they're Protestant, obviously not Catholic. And then within Protestantism, they're sort of Adventists. And Adventists believe, all Christians believe that Christ will return to earth, the second coming of Christ. But Adventists believe that that event will happen imminently or very soon or any day even. Christ will return sort of any day.
I remember hearing throughout the years lots of different groups having different predictions based on some very strange analysis of parts of the Bible, like counting chapters and page lengths and all sorts of weird things that you would think are just quirks of the English translation of the Bible. So why would that matter? But there we go.
Yeah, because some Christians say, oh no, that's just a metaphor for something else. It's not necessarily that rapture, the return of Christ, is sort of imminent or anything. But lots of Christians do think it could happen or is going to happen in their lifetimes and things. I mean, Christ himself, in the Bible, if you ever read the Gospels, does say that the end times are coming in their lifetime. I've heard Christ described as an apocalyptic rogue rabbi. That's not really exactly a great description, but nevertheless,
preach. That sounds like some sort of action movie remake of Jesus's life. Jesus as played by Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, buddy Christ, the end days are coming. The Adventists believe, and Seventh-day Adventists are a type, Seventh-day Adventists, they put a great deal of importance on the Sabbath, Saturday, just like Hebrews, that you don't really do anything on Saturday.
You don't roll on Shabbos.
yeah, definitely don't. So, the Branch Davidians are a sort of a branch off of Seventh-day Adventists. And they, again, have a very sort of literal interpretation of the Bible. They think that what the Bible says is literally exactly true. That's one of their things. Again, different types of Christians put more or less emphasis on that. Like a Church of England, a person who's in the Church of England, an Anglican, would say, no, most of it isn't meant to be taken literally exactly true. It's all sort of allegory and
well,
metaphor.
At the minute, they're going to throw the Bible over their shoulder and say, here's white fragility. You'll prefer that.
Yeah. But Seventh-day Adventists and certainly Branch Davidians think that whatever said in the Bible, particularly the book of Revelations, which is the last book, is literally true. Now, don't want to get too judgy, but to my mind, that's mental. That's mental. Have you ever read Revelations?
No, I haven't.
Okay. The Bible is a fascinating book. It's weird to me, but it's fascinating. So you've got the scriptures, the Old Testament. And, they're interesting stories. Then you've got the Gospels, the four books that tell the story of the life of Jesus. Then at the end, you've got the book of Revelations. There's other bits and bobs in it as well. But at the very end, you've got the book of Revelations, and it's bizarre. I don't mind saying that. It's a bizarre read. Read it a few times. In fact, I reread it 2 or 3 months ago. I was talking to Connor about it. Revelations is a weird thing. Like it sort of barely makes sense. Just to give an overview of it, it talks about the end, because when the Messiah, when Jesus returns to earth, that is the end of days. That is, there'll be some sort of giant battle, an apocalypse, an Armageddon. And what it describes is loads and loads of crazy stuff. Like the sun turns black, the moon turns blood red, the seas boil off, or some of the seas and the rivers turn to blood, and some boil off, and then a third of the people die like this, and then the rest of the people die like this, and there'll be the fourth horseman of the apocalypse. A lamb that looks like he's slaughtered will come back, but it's actually the Lamb of God, and there'll be an antichrist on a horse wearing white with a bow and arrow. It just goes on. There'll be a plague of locusts, giant man-sized locusts, depending on your translation you read. It just goes on and on and on. It's like to me, it's like the babblings of an insane person, of there's a superstitious, crazed babble of nonsense, well, nearly. That's what Revelations is to me.
I feel a bit facetious doing this, but surely if a supreme being is bringing wrath upon planet Earth, he wouldn't really need to turn the rivers red with blood if he's sending man-sized locusts and killing lots of people. It's kind of a bit of a redundant move, which makes me think that, yeah, maybe this doesn't seem like a coherent genocide strategy, God. So maybe this is made up by a person.
I don't think I'm going out on too much of a limb to say that the book of Revelations is not coherent. Yeah, it goes on and on and on as well. That there's loads of different things that will happen. All the bodies will rise from the ground that have been buried, all of them. And there'll be armies of the damned. They'll all converge on Jerusalem. At one point it says, all the mountains will be levelled or raised up out of the ground and then levelled. 144,000 Jews will be saved, just de rigueur.
So God has an affirmative action policy, apparently. All right.
Those that have been pure and been good Christians, they'll be judged and they'll be sort of saved, or their souls will be saved. The kingdom of heaven will quite literally physically come down to earth. The sky will roll back like a scroll. It just goes on and on and on like that. So Seventh-day Adventists and Branch Davidians anyway, believe that all of that is literally true. Exactly true. And would happen any moment. So the Branch Davidians go back to like the 1930s. Obviously long before their leader in this story, David Koresh, real name Vernon Howell. Long before he was born.
I didn't realise it was a pseudonym. Why would he choose that name?
because he's a little bit unhinged. He chose the name, I'll quickly say, he chose the name David Koresh because David, after King David,
mm-hmm.
and Koresh, which is the Hebrew word for Cyrus, i.e. Cyrus the Great, Cyrus the First of Persia, the King of Kings.
Okay.
So not that he's got a bit of an ego on him or anything, but King David and Cyrus, King of Kings, David Koresh, that's where he picked that name. So he had some sort of, if nothing else, some sort of crazy, crazy ego.
God complex, one might say.
Yeah, yeah. He never actually, people said that he thought he was the second coming of Christ. He didn't exactly. He thought he was a Christ. He thought he was a Messiah, not Jesus of Nazareth. He didn't say he was Jesus of Nazareth. He just said he was a prophet. He was a Messiah.
I'm trying really hard not to quote Life of Brian.
Right, yeah. Yeah. He's a sinful Messiah. That's one of the things he called himself. He's a very naughty boy. He didn't deny it. He was a very naughty boy. Anyway, Vernon Howell, their leader, long before he was born, there was the Branch Davidians set up in the 30s. And at one point in the 50s, they said, oh, the rapture, the end of days, is coming. The armies of Babylon, the evil armies of Babylon, are going to come, and it was going to be the end of the days. At some specific day in spring, in one of the early 50s at some point, they said that.
So,
and then just, it didn't happen, obviously, mm-hmm. and loads of people left their sect because
But what would the armies of Babylon actually look like? Some sort of... Because Babylon, obviously...
A couple of truckloads of ATF agents? No, sorry, I'm being facetious. I'm getting ahead of myself. Sorry, go on. But yeah, what would it look like?
Yeah, Babylon was obviously a real place, wasn't it, in the sort of...
Southern Iraq, yeah.
Mesopotamia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they basically were preempting the Iraq war? I don't know.
No, I think they did say that, you know, it's not... actually the armies of the actual place of Babylon. It's just like...
Oh, so they do understand metaphor. It's just right. Selectively. So yeah, yeah. When the literal translation can't possibly make sense because the kingdom of Babylon no longer exists, I was, well, you know, it's a metaphor, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So at some point in the 50s, they thought that the end of days was coming, and when it was shown not to have happened, lots of people left the sect, but it didn't die out. It continued on. It continued on under a particular family, the Roden family. And they had they're originally from Southern California somewhere, but they'd moved to Texas, just outside Waco, Texas, a little place that they called Mount Carmel. Now, again, that's taken from an actual place in Israel.
I thought as much, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So you don't really get places around that sort of way called Mount something, do you?
Mm. It is on a little rise of land, but it's not a mount in any sense.
Making a mountain out of probably a molehill mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, so Mount Carmel is in Israel. It's near, like Haifa is there. So there's loads of things. When you're sort of a very, very hardline Christian in all sorts of ways, your beliefs and your theologies cross over with the Jews in all sorts of ways, like the idea of observing the Sabbath very strictly, or even eating kosher food. Some evangelicals and some Adventists mm-hmm. will even go that far.
I've heard people say that they do it just to be safe, just like, well, you know, it's yeah. like Pascal's wager of culinary theology or something like that. I don't know.
There's a joke in The Simpsons where... Flanders says that joke, but it's not really a joke. A lot of some Christians are actually thing. Like that. So yeah, there's loads of allusions to the things that are in Israel. Like for example, that the end of days will come and the big final battle and things will be at Jerusalem, right? You know, if you venerate places like Galilee and Nazareth and Bethlehem, they're all in Israel.
Well, I mean, it is very true that the story of Christianity is very much wrapped up in that area, obviously. I mean, that's not exactly much of a revelation, if you pardon the pun.
Yeah, the Gardens of Gethsemane. There's endless sites in and around Jerusalem that are extremely venerated by Christians. Well, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the most sacred place in Christendom, you could argue, is in Jerusalem. David Koresh himself went to Jerusalem in the late 80s, on some sort of pilgrimage or just some sort of study holiday.
It'd be my number one destination for a holiday, anywhere where I need, you know, a flak jacket, maybe a bulletproof vest, is right at the bottom of my list of places I want to go.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's probably safe in many places. I'm a bit facetious.
I'd quite like to visit Jerusalem, again, just for the history nerd side of my personality. But I've got no real intention of doing it. Like, no thanks. I think I'll just go somewhere nice.
I mean, yeah.
Like the Seychelles or something. I'll go somewhere
pleasant. I'm going to Prague. I know I'm not going... Well, I might get stabbed or blown up or whatever. Don't know what the Islamic population there is like.
But one other thing to say about Revelations, because it's really important for the Branch Davidians and David Koresh, particularly David Koresh, is that in Revelations, one of its sort of babbling nonsense, one of the things it talks about is the when it describes the actual judgments of God, that there'll be seven seals. There'll be a giant scroll comes out of the sky with seven seals on it, and someone worthy, a Messiah figure, will be the only person able to take off these seals one at a time. As he takes these seals off one at a time, a little bit more of the scroll is revealed, which gives a judgment. Like, all these certain people will now be killed or judged, and then the next seal comes off, and then there'll be a plague of sores, and then the next one comes off, and then all the rivers will turn to, and so on.
So they're going to be like a sort of announcer for God, in a sense.
Yeah. So there's the seven seals, and after that there's the seven swords, and after that there's the seven bowls or vials of judgment. It's just contemptible nonsense to my mind. Anyway, it's all real.
It's like a cult version of, what is it? Is it 7 Days of Christmas? That song where it lists off all of the different things, all the different gifts.
Right. Yeah.
I might be misremembering the name of that.
12 Days of Christmas.
That's it. What did I say?
Seven.
It's because of seven,
the seven seals. But so David Koresh was on some level obsessed with the seven seals. Now, it is a bit enigmatic exactly what is meant. Like you could interpret the words in Revelations a few different ways if you wanted to. You know, when you translate it into English, it's possible that there can be discrepancies in the translation. And it might mean something quite different if you translate it a little bit differently. And you could certainly say, well, this line, even if we agree what the line in English is, it actually means this, right? Mm. So that's how you get preachers, is that this is my interpretation of what the Bible says. Anyway, David Koresh was sort of on some level obsessed with the seven seals in the book of Revelations, that he knew what they really meant. And if you join his church, if you join his ministry, he can explain to you what it means. And it's really, really important because, you know, the end of days, Armageddon, the rapture is coming possibly any day. So it's really important that you know and that he can reveal it to you, the revealed truth. So that's key to this all, is the seven seals and Koresh's analysis of what they really are, what they mean.
What was his analysis, or do we not know?
You might be surprised that he didn't really ever properly reveal it.
Oh, right. Somewhat convenient, isn't it?
He said he was going to write a big, long treatise about it and didn't get round to it.
Well, to be fair, I mean, did have a bit of an interruption.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to exactly how all that played out. All right, so let's talk a little bit about his early life. So his mother was had him when she was really young. I think she was like 15 or 16. Her name's Bonnie. I would say she. Lots of people in this story, I'm going to say, I think, are mentally retarded. And I use that word technically, literally, not just to be rude. I think they are sort of functioning retards. You know, again, they've got some
sort of learning disability or sort of low functioning IQ, that sort of thing.
Something like that. People where they're not able to pass reality correctly. they're not making good decisions. Mm-hmm. They're saying things that are, to my mind, to most people's minds actually, a bit mad.
I do find that these sort of cult sects of Christianity, not general Christianity, I'm sure people at home who are Christians probably don't agree with brainwashing mentally ill people. But lots of them target vulnerable people, don't they? And deliberately so, because they just want numbers. It doesn't necessarily matter about the people who are joining. They kind of want to flesh it out because it looks bad if there aren't that many people interested, and they're easy people to get on side because they're not very credulous in the first place.
I think that's the word, actually. I think that's the thing. Credulity. How easily led you are. How easily you believe something without any evidence. To be credulous. A lot of these people are unbelievably credulous. Childlike, actually, in their mind. So, like, his David Krish's mother, Bonnie, is one of those. I saw her in an interview long after, just saying with a straight face, "Oh, I think David will be resurrected and I'll see all my grandchildren again." Big smile. It's like, so you've got the levels of credulity of a small child. You must be sort of clinically retarded on some level, like not enough to be put in a hospital or put a crash helmet on you and a straitjacket in a padded room, but not far off of that, in my mind. I mean, it's weird. We get a lot of people that follow cults. Not all of them, though, and that's really interesting to me. Not all of them at all. But most of them are just extremely credulous.
I found that I remember watching a Louis Theroux documentary about the Westboro Baptist Church, and now I probably might not be fair to call them a cult necessarily, rather than a branch of Christianity, although they did have that central figure. But in lots of other areas, as opposed to their sort of quite niche views, I don't know how niche they are. I'm not exactly a Christian scholar, but at least from the outside, what looks like quite niche, extreme views, but then they would also be interpersonally completely indistinguishable from normal people.
Right.
Like they seemed very, very normal. And I get the impression that with this, that might not be necessarily the case. They're not necessarily aiming for a well-adjusted life like many other Christians are, in that they're thinking long-term, living a good life because they don't think the world's going to end. And I think that that's the integral aspect of it. If you believe the world's going to end and that nothing matters, well, you're not really going to plan that far for the future, obviously.
Yeah, have no thought for the morrow. It's interesting, though, because a lot of people, like the sheriff and other people that weren't in the Branch Davidians that lived in around Mount Carmel and Waco that knew these people, they said unanimously, and I completely believe them, they say they were all really lovely, polite, normal people, essentially.
Oh, really?
They're all very well-mannered,
well,
clean.
I mean, I'm not surprised about being well-mannered and stuff like that. I mean, Christian people always tend to be, don't they?
They weren't like firebrands that were trying to convert anyone. They weren't, you know, they were essentially good people, just credulous. But the other thing to point out is that not all of them, some of them were, did kick back against Koresh's teachings and leave. And like one guy was a Harvard educated lawyer who's just also been brought up in the Adventist tradition. And so it's interesting to me, really interesting, how you can get someone that on one level is highly, highly intelligent, certainly got a very high IQ, highly capable and intelligent and not really credulous, apart from this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you can be a Harvard educated lawyer, but still believe that rapture will be any day.
I mean,
crazy,
being a
not
lawyer,
crazy, it's just interesting to me.
I think lawyers are kind of up there in the professions of the most incredulous, like they kind of believe in nothing but making money, right? That's kind of the whole stereotype of them.
It's funny how you can have someone that's like a physicist, an experimental physicist, but it's also a Hindu, right? Who also, if you ask them, they would genuinely say, "No, I believe in Ganesha and stuff." But I know, but
to be fair,
also a particle physicist. It's like how people can have that cognitive dissonance in their mind. Lots of people can.
I've heard Christian academics speak before, actually, in person, and quite often they'll characterize it as, well, of course I'm doing this because, you know, I'm studying the world of God. I see it as my divine duty. And so they kind of couch it as, well, I would kind of be doing a disservice to Christianity if I didn't do this. So I kind of respect that in a sense. They've got a reason to understand the world, and I think it's quite a noble reason to spread understanding. So that's a good thing.
There's a logic to that, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.